It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My guest this half hour is New York Times bestselling author Ibram Kendi. His latest book is titled How to Be an Anti-Racist. In it, he explores the birth of modern racism and how to pave a new anti-racist path forward. Kendi is founding director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University, where he is professor of history and international relations. He's also a columnist with The Atlantic. His other books include The Black Campus Movement and Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America, and that won him the 2016 National Book Award for Nonfiction. Kendi was also awarded the prestigious Guggenheim Fellowship. Kendi will be in Iowa this week to give the Martin Luther King Jr. Legacy Series keynote at Iowa State University. That's at 7 p.m. on Thursday, January 23rd. Ibram Kendi, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's great to be on the show.
I want to start off by asking you about the usage of the word racist. You say we must return the word racist back to its proper usage. Explain that.
Well, I think that some Americans have been pushing this idea, and I think many Americans have come to believe that this is a fundamentally an attack term. It's a pejorative term. It's the equivalent of saying, I don't like you. And actually, I'm quoting Richard Spencer directly. He once said, racist isn't a descriptive term. It's a pejorative term. It's the equivalent of saying, I don't like you. But in fact, racist is a descriptive term. It has a very clear definition, and it describes what a person is saying or doing in any given moment. And I think that we should essentially understand this definition, be consistent with this definition, and apply it and use it to describe.
Mm-hmm. Richard Spencer, a noted, well-known white supremacist, for those who don't know. So take us back to what you see as the proper usage of racist.
So I define a racist as someone who is expressing a racist idea or supporting a racist policy with their action or inaction. Inherent in that definition is the recognition that people change from moment to moment. And so, in other words, in one moment, a person can be expressing a racist idea. And so in that moment, they're being racist. If in the very next moment they express an anti-racist idea, then in that very next moment, they're being anti-racist. So this idea that a racist is essential to who a person is, it's like a tattoo, mm-hmm. It is in someone's heart or bone, is simply not true. It describes what a person is doing. And so when a person is saying there's something wrong with a particular racial group, or when a person is supporting policies that are leading to inequity and injustice, they're being racist. So let me give an example. I think probably one of the more prominent, if not the most prominent, white male abolitionists in the lead up to the Civil War was William Lloyd Garrison. And for decades, he advocated immediate emancipation, which was not only a radical idea at the time, but it was also an anti-racist idea that these people that enslaved black people should be freed and freed immediately. And so clearly, this was an advocation of a policy that would have led to justice and equity. In those moments when he was advocating for immediate emancipation, he was being anti-racist. But in other moments, he would express this idea that slavery was so horrific and slavery was so evil that it was literally disconnecting black people from humanity, that it was literally making black people into brutes, that basically enslaved black people were subhuman, that there was something fundamentally wrong with enslaved black people, not something wrong with slavery, but now the people. And so in those moments when he was classifying black people as subhuman, he was being racist.
Mm, I see what you mean. So what are the consequences of incorrect usage of racist, the racist as a label, as a tattoo, as you said?
Well, I mean, I think you, for instance, have people in both the Republican and Democratic Party who say things like, I don't have a racist bone in my body. And that sort of presupposes again that that racist is essential to who a person is. You also have people who'd say that who refuse to define the term racist, but then will also say, well, this person is racist, or that person is racist, or Democrats are racist, or Republicans are racist, or Southerners, or anyone who's not me is basically racist, as opposed to clearly defining this term in a way that can be put in a dictionary and then using it to apply first and foremost to ourselves and the rest of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so give us a clear definition, the clearest definition you know of.
So again, I define a racist as someone who is expressing a racist idea or supporting a racist policy with their action or inaction. And I define a racist idea as any idea that suggests a racial group is superior or inferior to another racial group in any way. I define a racist policy as any policy that leads to racial inequity or injustice.
Mm-hmm. And in your writing and in your speaking, Ibram, you also tell your journey from racist to anti-racist. I wonder if you could share that, because you don't leave yourself out when it comes to behaving in a racist fashion, do you?
Yeah, so I mentioned about how we like to define racist in a way that excludes us. Essential to racism itself has always been denial. There's always been self-denial, societal denial. And so the contrast to that has always been confession, has always been acknowledging. And so while white people typically say, I'm not racist, people of color typically say, I can't be racist. If there's anything we're united about, it's that we're not racist, right? And so I felt it was necessary for me to sort of show the ways in which I had consumed particularly anti-Black racist ideas, those times in my life when I was saying things that, when I was saying there's something wrong with Black people, because when I was saying there's something wrong with Black people, I was looking at Black people as the problem, as opposed to racist power and policy. I was spending my time going after Black people as opposed to racism itself, which then meant I was not resisting racism. And if we're not resisting racism, we're being racist.
Mm-hmm. Give us an example or two from earlier in your life when you look back on it now and you say, I was being racist.
Well, I think in the 1990s, if there was ever a decade in American history where Black youth were considered the American problem, it was the 1990s. That was the decade in which it was imagined that, you know, hip hop was ruining us. It was imagined that Black youth were the most violent and vicious people in society, to the point in which some people, Republicans and Democrats, called us super predators. That was the decade in which we were imagined to not value education. And as a Black youngster, I consumed many of those ideas and came to believe them and ultimately expressed them. And so I chronicle that, you know, in my book.
Mm-hmm. Also to the point of what you wore, you talk about wearing colored contact lenses.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's also this idea that sort of, you know, some people believe that the lighter your skin, the more beautiful. The lighter your eyes, the more beautiful. And so I came to believe that. And so I ended up, when I was in college, utilizing light orange, or I should say honey contacts, because I thought that made me more beautiful, because I had consumed this idea that sort of standardized whiteness. And I sort of felt that I was lacking and I needed to change myself because of it.
If you've just joined us, my guest is New York Times bestselling author Ibram Kendi. He is founding director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University, where he is a professor of history and international relations. His latest book is titled How to Be an Anti-Racist, and in it he explores what we can do about racism. He has an impressive history of studying racism in our country, in the world, going back centuries.
Let's talk about that anti-racist as opposed, back to language, anti-racist as opposed to being not racist. What is the difference?
So if a racist idea suggests that certain racial groups are better or worse than others, an anti-racist idea suggests that the racial groups are equal, that genetically we're pretty much the same, that behaviorally the racial groups are the same. Meaning, you know, any racial group, you're going to have people who love, you're going to have people who work hard, you're going to have people who don't work hard. And no one has ever made a case that a particular positive or negative behavioral trait is predominating in one group. They've made theories, they've conjectured, they have hypotheses, but they've never been able to prove that. But there are differences. There are ethnic differences and cultural differences in every ethnic group. Has been racialized, and every ethnic group practices a different culture. And so to be anti-racist is to not essentially judge other cultures from your own cultural standard. To be anti-racist is when we see cultural difference, that's all we're seeing is cultural difference and appreciating the diversity of cultures in this country and around the world.
Mm-hmm. So the way you're describing it can be really hard to do this, to make this transition, because many of us are not even aware of racist behavior, usage, and so forth.
And I think our lack of awareness is because we refuse to define terms. And so if we, for instance, collectively, if we recognize that any time we said something is wrong or right, better or worse, superior and inferior about a racial group, that we're expressing a racist idea, we would then realize when we're expressing a racist idea. If we realize that there are only two causes of racial inequality between racial groups, either it's the result of racist policy or the result of certain racial groups being better or worse than others. In other words, there's only two reasons why the black unemployment rate is twice as high as the white unemployment rate. Either it's because black workers are lazy, they're not qualified, there's something wrong with black workers, or racist policies within our employment industry. And so each individual can then say, okay, why do I believe there this inequity exists? And when we start expressing ideas, it's because there's something wrong with groups of people. We can then recognize those ideas as racist.
What other policies? You mentioned employment policies. What other policies are at the top of your list of what you would consider racist policies currently?
I mean, where do we
start?
Where do we even begin?
Right.
I mean, obviously, when you look at the criminal justice system and the fact that black people are about 13% of the national population, but 40% of the incarcerated population. You know, that's the result of something as simple as drug enforcement units being concentrated in black and brown communities as opposed to wealthy white communities where people are just as likely to consume and sell drugs. And so clearly, wherever the police are, that's where people are more likely to be arrested. Or, you know, obviously, there's been flashpoints over the last few years about people not only being killed by police, but then those police officers not being held accountable. And that's partly because in many jurisdictions, the police have the ability to police themselves and to investigate themselves. And so obviously, if you don't have an outside independent investigator, the likelihood of justice sort of plummets.
Let me ask you about immigration, the great debate over immigration and President Trump. He had the comment about immigrants from Norway, we all remember, but also he called for a merit-based immigration plan, prioritizing merit over family ties, for instance. What is your view of this? It seems to be nothing to do with color, but merit, right? Skills, background.
I think what's critical for us to understand is the way in which rhetoric like that is used to discriminate. And what I mean by that is he classified African countries as S-holes,
Yep.
But African immigrants are the most have higher levels on average of education than any other group of immigrants. And so presumably, if we're going to be basing it based on merit, that means African immigrants are going to be more likely to be able to come to this country than any other group of immigrants if that merit is partly educational. But obviously, that's not the purpose, right? The purpose is to make it appear that they're opening the doors to white immigrants because they are essentially the most superior immigrants, when indeed that's actually not the case.
How can voters during this voter season evaluate candidates when it comes to the ideas you have in this book about how to be an anti-racist?
Well, I think anytime a candidate is saying that there's something wrong with a particular group of people, meaning that if only they would change behaviorally or culturally, then they would be able to sort of get over in that particular sphere. Anytime we hear someone saying that, we're hearing a racist idea. And of course, that candidate is going to deny that that idea is racist in the way we deny our ideas are racist. But anytime a candidate is looking at transformation of policy to reduce inequity, whether we're talking about inequities between genders or classes or certainly races, now we're talking about people who actually have the ability to reduce inequities, because the inequities in our society are the result of policies. And I think that, you know, I think we should be thinking through, okay, which set of policies have the greatest ability to reduce inequity, and which candidates are pushing these policies.
Mm-hmm. To be more specific on what you're referring to, in one instance at least, you say that reparations, a compensation policy for the descendants of slaves in this country, are a litmus test for whether a person is being a racist or anti-racist. So if you are not in favor of a reparations policy, a compensation policy for descendants of slaves in this country, you are a racist? Is that what you're saying?
Well, actually, I wouldn't say it's a litmus test. What I would say is for people who say that they are serious about reducing the growing racial wealth gap in this country. And what I mean by growing is, you know, currently there's a sizable racial wealth gap. Last I checked, white people have about 10 times on average more wealth than black people. And forecasters are estimating that by 2053, black median wealth will redline at $0. And between now and then, white median wealth is expected to grow. For anybody who's serious about reversing, let alone eliminating, this growing racial wealth gap, I would ask them, how do they expect to essentially eliminate this racial wealth gap without a policy like reparations? And without a massive policy like reparations, especially when we know the racial wealth gap is the result of past and present economic policies. And so that's what I always typically ask people. And typically, people advance policies that have no chance of reversing, let alone closing, the racial wealth gap. So that means, to me, says that they're not serious about eliminating that gap.
Mm-hmm. As we conclude this conversation, Ibram Kendi, I wonder if you can give us a look into the future as far as your hopes. Can you describe an anti-racist society of the future? How will we know when we've arrived? How will we know when we are making steps toward that destination?
I think first and foremost, racial inequities and injustices would not exist. And so I just mentioned earlier how 40% of the incarcerated population is black, even though we make up 13%. That disparity wouldn't exist. Black people wouldn't be twice as likely to be unemployed. Latinx immigrants would not be considered invaders, while immigrants from other countries are welcomed with open arms. These types of things would not be happening in this country. But you know what also would not be happening? voters would not be mass manipulated by racist ideas to support policies and candidates that are actually not going to help them. And people would essentially not be able to be manipulated by racism. And then racism would not be reinforcing sexism. It would not be reinforcing economic inequality. It would not be reinforcing homophobia and ethnocentrism in the ways that it is now. And so an anti-racist society, you know, would be a society in which no bigotry exists. So each and every one of us who probably have an identity that is subjected to some form of oppression, we would not be having to sort of deal with that. And instead, we would be able to be our full humanity. We would be able to have, you know, equal opportunities, and the best would actually be the best.
Mm-hmm. In conclusion, how can those listening play an active role in building an anti-racist society if that is their vision as well?
I think first and foremost, for us to look around at our institutions and our communities and to investigate whether there are inequities and injustices, for us to investigate if there are actually organizations or people in our community who are advocating against those inequities and injustices, and to essentially figure out ways we could support those organizations or people, whether that's we don't have that much time, but we have some money, we can finance or help finance these organizations, or if we don't have much money, but we have some time, volunteer some of our time, or for some of us who have neither money nor time, figure out other ways to sort of support and to essentially be a part of this struggle to create equity and justice for all Americans.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps correct the usage of racism where you see it, or perhaps as you have done, admit to racism in the past, whether you're African-American as you are or white as I am, use racism in a way that doesn't make it a tattoo, a stamp, an identification tattoo that can't be changed.
Precisely, because it is not. It is a descriptive term, and it very clearly and clinically describes when a person is saying that there's something inferior about a racial group or creating or pushing an injustice or an inequity. That's being racist and nothing else.
Okay, thank you very much. Ibram Kendi has been with us, founding director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University. He's their professor of history and international relations there. His latest book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. Ibram, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on the show.